Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Well, I hope you're all sitting down or pulling over to the side of the road if you're driving and listening to this, because we have, you know, quite the lineup here. We're going to be talking about the Monster Mash, preventing parasites, with the one and only Dr. Brooke Moore and Dr. Peter Weinstein. And we have our friend Kelly Detweiler that's in the house too, just for moral support, to say hello. How are you, my friends?
Outstanding, Adam. Always a pleasure to hang with you.
Doing great. We're excited to be here. Cheering on my favorite doctors.
Right. I love it. This is so much fun. Well, to our listeners that are tuning in, a little bit of information about our friend, Dr. Brooke Moore. She obtained her BA from Franklin and Marshall College in 2001, and then attended and graduated from the University of Pennsylvania Veterinary School 2005. What? She spent 6 years in small animal clinical practice before starting an industry career with Novartis Animal Health in 2011. She's now a regional consulting veterinarian with Elanco Animal Health, and she has a special interest in preventative medicine, enjoys educating veterinary professionals about new trends in veterinary medicine. She's received advanced training in parasitology, immunology, pain management, and customer service principles. She enjoys and she resides in beautiful Bucks County, Pennsylvania, with her husband, three children, and her dog. She enjoys running, hiking, and spending time with her amazing family. Awesome. We also have Kelly Detweiler that's in the house. And if you have not listened to their podcast with her and Peter, you need to pick it up, because she is a DEA and regulatory compliance expert who provides controlled substances and DEA listed chemical solutions. And she's a partner in Simple Solutions for Vets with Dr. Peter Weinstein. So we got to give her a little loving over there, because your articles are fantastic. So thank you, Kelly. And last but certainly not least is the one and only Dr. Peter Weinstein. He's a husband, father, pet parent, veterinarian, leader, my mentor, my friend, my everything. He's been involved with virtually all aspects of veterinary practice, from a 15-year-old kennel kid to a hospital owner. Organized veterinary medicine has been a passion, as well as with various roles in leadership and presidencies of the Southern California VMA, California VMA, and Vet Partners. He's a published author, most notably of The E-Myth Veterinarian, Why Most Veterinary Practices Don't Work and What to Do About It. Currently, he is teaching business and finance at the Veterinary College of Western University of Health Sciences. And he likes to think himself as a free thinker and, you know, likes to think himself as a free thinking change agent, which I love, and disruptor, who, because he has a daughter in veterinary school who just graduated, by the way, is working for even better veterinary professions in the future, which is awesome. So, all right, we got a lot to cover and unpack here. Are we all ready, my friends?
Ready to go.
Rock and roll.
All right. And with the warmer weather comes, of course, the emergences of none other than fun things that affect our furry family, such as ticks, fleas, and intestinal parasites. So, you know, we love talking about that. It's good to get some refreshers. So let's talk about some various types of monsters that latch onto or get inside our pets. So, Dr. Moore, what can you tell us about these creepy crawlers and monsters?
Well, we're going to talk about lots of things today, Adam. But first of all, thank you for having me along with Peter and Kelly. It's always great to be able to pick three veterinarians' brains and a drug expert. So we're going to have a lot of fun today. And I'll tell you, this is going to sound weird, but I am extremely passionate about parasites. And honestly, they're fascinating creatures, but I'm even more passionate about protecting our pets from them. And the first thing I will say is that parasites are gross. Have you ever had an owner say, oh, I'm cool with my dog having worms? No, that's not going to happen. People don't like their pets to have worms. And so, unfortunately, it's super simple for our pets to become infected with these parasites. It could be as simple as them going outside in the backyard to do their business in the morning, and they are chugging along and they ingest a parasite egg. And our nematodes are usually going to infect our pets that way. So think about your whipworm, your hookworm, your roundworm. And those suckers travel through the GI tract and they wreak havoc. Can you say diarrhea, right? I know no one wants to come home from a long day at work to find that in their household. Other parasites are a little more complicated, like the tapeworm, which requires an intermediate host like a flea. They need a friend, right? They need somebody to help them get into our pets. And then the ectoparasites have it pretty easy, right? It can be as simple for them to hitch a ride on your pet when they go outside or go to your friend's apartment or anything along those lines. So unfortunately, our pets are under constant attack, Adam. And so that's why we're here today.
Yeah. So Brooke, I got to ask you a question.
Yeah.
You have weather, you're in Pennsylvania, but this time of year, I'm assuming you get home, you stop work, you take your shoes off and walk around your house. Do you feel comfortable just walking barefoot around your house?
Well, you know, I do usually take off my shoes unless I'm in a hurry, Peter, unless I'm like in a rush, right? And I have to dash in and out. Why? What do you take your shoes off?
Well, I do, and usually put on something else comfortable, but I bet you didn't know that in a recent study, researchers evaluating dogs' paws and pet owners' shoes found something that I wasn't aware of, and that it turns out that 11% of the people had parasite eggs on the soles of their shoes.
Ew.
For dogs, that's even worse because their feet, which don't have shoes, have 19% of the, now Adam's dogs have shoes. I've seen.
I was just going to say, you know, okay. They have booties.
They have booties. I'm sure they have Adidas.
They're probably nicer than mine.
Yeah. So 19% of dogs have parasites on their paws. Now, luckily, most of us don't lick our own feet, although I can demonstrate that I can still put my foot in my mouth physically and from what I have to say. But think about how readily we can become infected just from our pet's feet. And I tell you, my dog, Bruce, sleeps on the bed. And not only does he sleep on the bed, but he sleeps on my head. And, you know, he likes to put his feet on my face in the morning and wake me up. And now that I know that he's got a 1 in 5 chance of having gross things on his feet, I'm going to sleep on the floor.
Yeah. Well, Peter, you did give him a human name. I mean, Bruce. I mean, he's totally right. Expecting to sleep in the bed.
Absolutely. And rock right. And roll.
I do like smelling their Frito feet. So there goes that. You know, it's so crazy just how these dogs have become infected with some not so friendly friends. So how common are these parasites, Brooke?
Well, it's a good question, Adam. And I have some information for you. And I have to say, when owners ask me this type of question, I really let them know that these parasites are incredibly common. And that's why we're making the recommendation that their pets need to be dewormed every month. So let's look at some statistics, right? Let's look at some stats. And so in one study, which looked at shelter dogs, to be fair, these were not client-owned dogs, but Ancylostoma caninum was found in 29.8%, that's almost 30% of dogs, having hookworms, 12.5% had rounds, and 18.7% of the dogs had the great old whipworm, right? You want to talk about some diarrhea, there's your baby. And so these parasites are really common. And then if you look at the tapeworm, which can be pretty difficult to diagnose anyway, in one study down in the southern United States, so to be fair, right, remember geographically speaking, tapeworm prevalence is going to vary pretty heavily. But in the southern United States, in one study, 58% of shelter dogs had tapeworms and 45% of client-owned dogs were positive for tapeworms. So, you know, these parasites are out there. They're super common. And that's why, quite frankly, we make a big deal about it.
In Southern California, which is a very dry climate, we're actually a desert climate on the ocean.
Remind me to bring my water if I ever come visit you.
Absolutely. And your moisturizer. So we saw more tapeworms because of the fleas.
Yeah.
We saw much fewer incidents of rounds, hooks, and whips than we did of the tapes, but we also had a significant amount of Giardia and Coccidia, other parasites that we have to concern ourselves with. So our dry climate is of greater concern. And as you're talking about, we've got a national and international audience. You have to understand your demographics, you understand the outside. But the other thing that we as veterinarians have to take into consideration is that our clients travel and they bring their pets. And they bring their pets to environments that they don't know about because they haven't asked the questions about traveling from Southern California, traveling from LA to LA, Los Angeles to Lower Alabama. There's completely different lifestyle for parasites in Lower Alabama than there is in Los Angeles. So we have that responsibility to be communicating that and helping clients understand that when they travel with their pets, they're putting their pets at risk for problems that they may not have in their own backyard.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I'm so like just kind of floored, Brooke, that these numbers are like really high.
Yeah, I know. And so, and to be fair, Adam, you know, those are shelter numbers. And so certainly those dogs, we would expect them to have higher numbers. Yeah. But let's look at another study. And this is one that I was actually involved in back in 2019. And what we were looking at was well cared for client owned dogs that visited dog parks or Disneyland, right? For our dogs, yeah. Disney World, Disneyland, right? But you know, the problem with dog parks is that there's a lot of dogs going there, and we know that oftentimes they can pick up friends when they're visiting. And so I was involved in this study. We actually conducted it across 30 cities in the United States. I got lucky Philadelphia, right? I went to school in Philadelphia, lived down there for quite a few years. And I will tell you, the first day on the job, I was down in Philly, and it was 7 o'clock in the morning. It was the middle of July. I was already sweating. It was so humid and hot. And I walked up to this woman. She looked nice. I think she had a standard poodle. And I said, "Good morning. My name's Dr. Moore. I'm conducting a study." And she goes, no, I don't have any money. And I was like, "Oh, no, I don't want your money. I'm just conducting a study. I was wondering if you would give me your dog's fecal sample." She ran away from me faster than anything. And it was at that moment I recognized that there was an art to asking someone for their dog's excrements, right? I needed to perfect my technique.
So Brooke, what was your favorite pickup line?
I got to work on those. I'll tell you what, you know, I've been married to my husband now for 16 years. That's not in my wheelhouse. But the point of the story here is this, right? We have the shelter data, and now we have this data, and still in client-owned dogs, 7.1% of them were positive for hooks, 1.9% were positive for whips, and 0.6% were positive for rounds. So here's the deal, right? Whipworms and hookworms rule the day in adult dogs, and people forget that, right? Because we're so used to seeing puppies, and puppies are almost always born with roundworms, and so we see those more frequently in the puppies. But in adult dogs, whipworms and hookworms are always number one and two, basically no matter what study you look at. So it's a good reminder for us.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you think of all these parasites, just sounds so awful talking about it, but gives you a little bit of the heebie-jeebies, but I think veterinary medicine has come such a long way with, you know, prevention and so forth. But I want to pivot a little bit more and talk about kind of like zoonotic diseases and in humans. So do they need to worry about parasites, Brooke?
Yeah. And that's the other half of the puzzle here, right? These parasites are so prevalent. And then unfortunately, some of them, like the hookworm and the roundworm and certain types of tapeworms, which people forget all the time, right? That echinococcus, people can get that. People forget about that. And, you know, it's not an ideal circumstance when you have Bruce laying on your head, right, in bed or whatever. So we want to make sure we're protecting them. And you know who's at the highest risk are our kids, right? I have three little kids running around. Last night we were playing wiffle ball in the backyard. And kids do things that really predispose them to becoming infected with parasites, right? They play in the dirt. And then what do? They put their hands in their mouth, right? They're not thinking about the fact, ooh, I should wash my hands before I suck my thumb or, you know, get this lollipop laying on the ground and stick it back in my mouth. They're not thinking about that. And, you know, some of these diseases that they can get, especially from Toxocara or the roundworm, ocular larval migraines, it causes blindness in children, right? Visceral larval migraines causes organ dysfunction in children. And adults can get it too, right? If they're immunocompromised or have other issues. And so, you know, it's something we want our clients to be aware of. We don't want to scare them. We still want Bruce to be able to sleep in the bed, right? But we need to have an education about it. We need to know about it. And make sure, right, that they're getting a monthly broad spectrum dewormer. Peter, I know you had a little trick of the trade for me, and something we talked about last time we spoke is how important it is to pick up that feces, right?
Well, I think if you have a job board at home for your little kids, and I know Kelly does, they have a duty, you know, if they want to get their allowance, they have the duty of cleaning up after their pets. So, and you have to remind them after they use that 6 foot long rake and scooper that they still need to clean up their hands after they pick up the poop. But I think it's exquisitely important for us as people to be responsible pet owners. And I walk Bruce at least twice a day, and I can't tell you how much poop is in the community that has not been picked up. So start in your backyard, but make sure you're advocating for poop patrol in your community as well from that standpoint. As veterinarians, based upon especially what Brooke was talking about with visceral and ocular larval migraines, we have a legal responsibility to educate our clients about the risks to themselves and to their children of exposure through feces for different parasites, roundhooks, whips, Giardia, et cetera. We must document that we've had that conversation, and especially if they decline, the work that needs to be done to diagnose and ultimately treat and prevent. So I hate to get serious about this, but because it's a fun conversation. Sure, we're talking about feces. It's a fun conversation.
Yeah.
And I had to edit that statement, by the way. We really do have a responsibility, and we really do need to talk about risk factors and how easy things are to prevent if you just take and are compliant in using the medications that are available.
Yeah.
I think we should have like a neighborhood watch poop patrol, you know?
You know, they're trying to do some genetics so you could actually take a fecal sample, send it off, and identify the breed of the source of the poop.
Oh, yeah,
and
that's right.
Track it down to the neighbor who's got the German Shepherd or whatever
right.
The case may be.
Yeah, it's like, whose landmine is this? So, yeah, remember to do your duty, you know? So, Brooke, are these parasites easy to diagnose?
Well, I wish I had an easy answer for you, Adam, but I have to say it does depend on the type of worm we're talking about. And so, for example, in a recent study, 96% of Diplodium caninum infections were missed on fecal flotation. So that's not very good, right? That means if there's 100 dogs, we're finding 4 of them on fecal flow. But here's the deal with tapeworms, right? If we're talking about the flea tapeworm, almost always it's the owner that diagnoses those, right? Not us. And trust me, when they see those moving proglottids, it's an emergency, right? They are coming to your to your hospital on 2 wheels, right? They're getting in there right now. You know, their dog hasn't eaten in 3 days, but you know, that's not the end of the world. But if there's a tapeworm, they're coming in. And so, you know, it's pretty upsetting to see that. But then if we're talking about something like Echinococcus, right, another type of tapeworm, the owner's not going to be able to see those. They're too small, right? They can't see them with the naked eye. And so that's where they need to run a PCR, which a lot of times they might not be thinking about Echinococcus, right, because it's not as common. And they can miss that diagnosis. And I will tell you this. I'm going to tell you guys a story. When I was in full-time practice, I thought if I had a negative fecal, there were no worms. It's negative. I'm good to go, moving on to another differential diagnosis. But here's the cold, hard truth, guys. Fecal analysis is not perfect. We miss a lot of whipworm infections, even hookworm or roundworm infections, even if we're doing centrifugation with our fecals and sending them out, right? They are not perfect tests. So please, 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 you know, I always talk to my veterinarians and say, hey, look, If it fits the form of having a parasite, like let's say you have a young dog that maybe isn't on preventative and it has clinical symptoms of parasites, but its fecal's negative, just treat it, right? If you're concerned, just deworm. Because you hate to miss that, right? You don't want to be the vet that sends a dog to the specialist, right? And the dog ends up with whipworms or something like that, right? You don't want to be that guy.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and sometimes using the term negative, that the fecal was negative, you'd be better off using terminology such as there were no parasites noted.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that there isn't a problem, but on this one sample, there were no parasites noted, but we still suggest that and recommend that the best treatment is to treat the patient, not just the stool. We're not treating the stool sample. We're treating the patient that produces the stool sample from that standpoint. So, you know, we've been talking about the internal bugs.
Yeah.
Those things that we're walking around with internally, or our patients are walking around with internally, but hey, spring has sprung. A couple of days, it'll be summer. And with that, in Pennsylvania, your external parasite population will bloom. We have a year-round parasite problem in California because our weather is temperate. Talk to us, Brooke, about those things that latch on to the animals of our, that latch on to our animals, the external bugs that bug us because we can actually see them.
I know, right? And don't you find, Dr. Weinstein, that people are more compliant about their flea and tick preventative because they can see them, right? They can actually see them.
Yeah.
And so they have that ick factor, whereas with a lot of our internal parasites, they can't see them. And so a lot of times it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. But I don't know about Adam and Peter, but I'll tell you, I know I've had several emergencies in veterinary medicine where I have a moving wart. Right. Or a wart that's getting bigger really quickly, and they come in and it's a tick, right? That happens often. And I have to tell you, you know, we live in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and we have a major tick issue here. I mean, I do tick checks on my children every night. They're that bad. And they're here. I just picked two dog ticks off of Blake the other night. And so it definitely is happening. People, I do think, are a little more compliant, again, because they can see them. And remember, nothing transmits more disease other than the mosquito. Mosquito transmits the most disease of any ectoparasite in the world, but ticks are number two. And they transmit, the longer they're attached, the more likely it is they're going to transmit a disease, whether it be Lyme, anaplasma, or lickiosis, and all the other ones we don't know about yet. So flea and tick preventative is extremely important. And at the end of the day, we also have to remember those mosquitoes, right? Because mosquitoes transmit heartworm disease. And again, people don't think about that a lot because they can't see it. We talk about it a lot. But here's the deal, you know, with heartworm disease, unfortunately, in the US, we've seen an increase between 2013 and 2017 of 20%.
Wow.
And so what do you think, Peter? What does that tell us?
Well, it tells us that people are moving around. I will tell you that after Katrina, when a lot of the animals from some from New Orleans specifically were relocated to the West Coast, we saw more and more cases of heartworm disease. And I think we're seeing more and more of the vector, the flea, excuse me, the mosquito, erase that, the mosquito that carries it in Southern California. So we're starting to see more and more. I honestly did not see many cases that were indigenous to SoCal when I was in practice, but I saw a lot of cases that came as a result of people traveling. And so we need to be thinking about the fact that we see mosquitoes all the time. And we have to recognize that even though we don't see them as a vector to us, we have to recognize them as a vector for our patients, our pets from that standpoint. And so when it comes down to flea and tick, we also need to remember about heartworm preventatives as well. We need to recognize also that many of the heartworm preventatives also have a benefit of treating internal parasites. And so in Southern California, where we would treat internal parasites and heartworm concurrently, we were treating both because it was much easier just to treat them both on a monthly basis than to treat a disease when we actually saw it. So we have to discuss heartworm disease as a result of mosquitoes. We have to discuss the diseases associated with flea and tick. And again, it is our responsibility as veterinarians to remind clients that, hey, they get Lyme disease, pets get Lyme disease. They get Ehrlichia, pets get Ehrlichia. And that we can't ignore the fact that we are the resource for education of our clients And when I say we, I'm talking about the entire veterinary team. This is a great opportunity to leverage your team from an education standpoint.
Absolutely. And I always say, don't miss the opportunity when we're educating about heartworm disease to educate about intestinal parasites, because at least here in the Northeast, I'll tell you what, right now, we see far more intestinal parasites than we do heartworm. Not to say that heartworm's not important. It is, but certainly we see far more intestinal parasites. So it's great to offer a product that's going to kind of do it all.
And, you know, speaking of products, it, you know, we hear often throughout the country that, you know, we don't necessarily need to put them on prevention all year round or whatnot, or how often should we be putting them on prevention? So, Brooke, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, 50 years ago, Adam, we had these things called seasons in the Northeast. It got kind of cold. We used to go skiing. We did some fun things, right? And now, I mean, we didn't get a single snowstorm in Pennsylvania this year. It was crazy. So, you know, certainly the climate is changing, and it is not unusual, you know, to see a mosquito in February now in the state of Pennsylvania, which is insane, right? Mm-hmm. 50 years ago, that wouldn't have happened. And we also have to remember ticks are active at temperatures above 40 degrees Fahrenheit. So guess what? I would say the majority of our days this winter, we had temperatures above 40 degrees, at least for some part of the day. And so certainly, you know, when we're talking about flea and tick preventative and heartworm and intestinal parasite preventative now, they need to be on it year round. And here's why. If you let your guard down, right, that's when they're going to get infected. That's when the pet's going to get into trouble if we're not recommending year round coverage.
So you guys don't have four seasons in the Northeast? We have four seasons: fire, flood, earthquake, and drought. Fire, flood, earthquake, and drought. Those are the California four seasons.
Yeah, a little different. Yeah. So when you're evaluating a product as a clinician, what should you be looking for that's best practice?
Two words, Adam. You ready?
Ready. Hold on. I'm sitting down.
You're sitting down. Are you sitting down? Okay.
Yes.
Broad spectrum.
Okay.
And so here's the deal. There are a lot of products out there now. You know, when I graduated almost 20 years ago, there weren't that many. Well, guess what? Now we have a ton of them. I don't know what you guys do every morning. I wake up, I watch Good Morning America for a few minutes. I drink my coffee before my children all start yelling. And I will tell you, there are always advertisements for flea and tick preventative, for heartworm preventative, right? And it's, I mean, can you imagine being the average consumer, how confusing that would be to you, right? They don't know what these things do. And so, you know, the problem now is that we have a lot of options. But I'll tell you this, as a mom with three little kids, I'm extremely busy. I work full time. My husband works full time. And the last thing I want to have to deal with is worms or a Lyme infection or an anaplasma infection or whatever it is. I don't need the dog getting sick. And so for me, I want a broad spectrum product that's going to deworm for heartworm, whipworm, roundworms, tapeworms, and hookworms, in addition to protecting them against flea and tick. And I want the products that are going to do that in the best way possible. And I would argue most owners are going to want that, right? Most people want the best product. So again, no one wants to come home to that diarrhea, including me. So when you're purchasing your products, make sure you know which parasites they get, how long they last for, right? All that stuff.
So this is great stuff, my friend. So what types of dangers could be the wrong product to pose to your pet? Because you know, we get asked this a lot.
Not only do we get asked this a lot, but we get to clean up the mess of people who create and purchase the wrong products.
Right.
So people are exposed to a lot of different products through the internet, through pet stores, through the fact that they have a large dog and a small dog, and if we could buy the large dog version, can't we just split the pills and give it to the small dog? Or can't we take the large dog version and split it amongst three pets? So it's important as veterinarians for us to educate clients about best products and to have recommendations about the products that we have tested, used, feel comfortable about, utilize on our own pets, utilize on our staff's pets from that standpoint. Many of the products for cats are safe only for cats. Products that are made for dogs are not safe for use in cats. And over the last 20, 30 years, the products have changed dramatically from the bombs and the nuclear waste that we used to use to these much safer products. Safer doesn't mean that it's completely without risk. We also need to be understanding breed-specific sensitivities to some of these products as well. So as much as there are all of these products out there, it is our responsibility as veterinarians to do our due diligence and to educate our staff, who then can educate our clients about best products and the risks of buying products online and the risks of buying products at pet stores. Because you buy the wrong product, it's one of these save money now, but pay me the veterinarian later, right,
Brooke? I know. And I have a terrible story about that. When I used to work overnights in Kentucky, and I'll never forget it. This poor woman came in with four little kittens that had terrible flea infestations. And she had gone and purchased a pyrethrin-based canine product and put it on all four of them. Uh-oh. You know, and then they had pyrethrin toxicity, and she ended up with a huge vet bill, which I felt terrible about, but right, we had to treat the kittens, and it was terrible. So we really do need to educate people, and the best people to do that are us, right? Veterinarians. Right. We went to school for it.
Right. Hey, well, but what are some of the signs a product might not be working for your pet, Brooke?
Well, I mean, first of all, if there's any side effect at all, right, there one product is not going to be a good fit for every single patient, right? So if there's any side effect, we want to know about it, and we want to maybe change that recommendation. Or if you're not seeing efficacy, right? Sometimes, you know, maybe they're not applying it right, or they're having issues there. We want to always reevaluate it there. But I will say this. Most of the clinics that I visit and spend time with are going to have a topical, a pill, a collar, or an injection, right? They're going to have different options so that they can tailor their recommendation to different pets. And the most important thing, right, at the end of the day, we do want them to get something, right? We want to make sure that they're getting that protection.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so as we're wrapping up, my friends, that we've been chatting about with the heebie-jeebies here, Brooke, I'm going to ask you, give me your three top recommendations that you could tell our listeners.
All right, you guys ready? Number one, all right, the first thing I would say, Peter, number one, he's got his
number one
finger up there for me. Number one, talk to your veterinarian, right? Come on. Yeah. Who's going to know more about this stuff? We went to school for 4 years to diagnose and treat disease in animals. So we are going to be the most knowledgeable resource when it comes to ectoparasites and internal parasites. It makes sense. And so again, involve the veterinarian. And make sure, right, we know from recent survey data that people trust their veterinarians the most when it comes to parasite control recommendations. Also, the second thing I will say, read the box. Number two, read the box. Evaluate the coverage. Know which parasites the product is covering. I can't tell you how many times I hear veterinarians say, I didn't know it didn't do that, right? So read the box. Know how long it lasts for, right? That's another thing. People can get confused by products because we now have products with different durations of action. So we want to make sure we know about that and understand what coverage you're getting, right? And am I getting it all or am I getting some? And then my third recommendation is directly for the veterinarian. And here's what it is. Make a recommendation. Yeah. I can't tell you how important that is, because here's the deal, guys. People are paying big bucks to come see us, right? To bring their pets to, well, maybe not big bucks, but you know what I mean. They're paying money to come visit with us and get our expert opinion. So make a recommendation. And also I would say, don't be afraid. If someone comes in and says, I saw this on TV, I want this. And you don't think that product is the best option for that patient, tell them, say, hey, I'm glad you asked about that product, but I actually recommend product B. And here's why. Right. And 99% of the time, those people are going to take your recommendation because you're the expert. And recognize you can't carry every single product. You can't do that. Right. So pick the ones you like and make a recommendation. And I know, Peter, you're pretty passionate about this with product selections in the clinic.
Yeah, from a compliance standpoint, we have to do a better job with number two.
Yeah.
And you can interpret that any way you want. But we have to do a better job making sure clients understand internal parasites and the risks. We have to do a better job of clients understanding ectoparasites and the risk. They need to trust us, which means we have to focus on building a trust. And to do so, this is a perfect area for team-based healthcare delivery. This doesn't have to be a doctor-centric conversation. This can be a conversation that starts with the client service team, extends into the exam room nurse or technician team. And the doctor's job really is just to validate the conversations that have already been had and say, we'll get you the best products that we feel are appropriate for your pet. And we need to be able to give them access to those products from a convenience standpoint, because remember, clients are looking for price, value, and ease. And if we can give them a source for these products from our online pharmacy, rather than some of the competitive online pharmacies that are out there, we can make it convenient. We can compete on price. And we can make sure that we stay in control of the relationship that we have with our clients. We can't just roll over and do a golden retriever and pee all over ourselves when it comes to an online pharmacy. We need to control the online pharmacy and having it in our control. We have to be proactive. We have to have the products that we recommend in-house. We have to have them from an online access as well. And we need to constantly teaching and educating and reinforcing this conversation. Do your duty when it comes to talking about internal parasites and clean up after your pets.
I love it.
Well, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much, my friends, and very insightful. You know what I love about this conversation? We really included everyone from the pet parent to the veterinary professional, because there's so many players involved when we're talking about parasite protection and control. So it's really great that we had this really good dialogue for all listeners that are tuning in right now. So thank you so much, Dr. Weinstein, Dr. Moore, and Kelly Detweiler. Thank you so much for being on.
Thanks for having us. I had an awesome time. Hope to do
Appreciate it again
soon.
You know, they don't call it the Vet Blast podcast for nothing, Dr. Moore, you know?
Awesome. Well,
thank you so much. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Please don't forget to rate today's podcast. It always helps us out as we grow and continue on our mission in the podcast world. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.